Welcome to Truth in the Shadow. I'm your host, Peggy, and today is a pretty special day. It's July 7th. And what that means is it's Lindsay Jo Baum's birthday, and she would be 23 today. But unfortunately, she disappeared when she was 10 years old, with no answers to where she could be found for another 9 years. Today's episode is for Lindsay.
This is a small town where most people know each other. The missing girl was heading from her friend's house, which is a few blocks that way, to her home, which is a couple of blocks that way. And in between sits the McCleary Police Department. But somewhere along that short stretch, something happened.
Lindsay Baum, who would turn 11 and 10 days past her disappearance, stood confidently at 4'9 and weighed about 80 pounds. She was described as outgoing by family and through media reports, and Lindsay was usually in the lead with her group of many friends she had surrounding her. She loved animals and told her mom she wanted to be a veterinarian someday. She also wanted to be a writer, and she wanted to be a singer. She wanted to be all the things that little girls dream about being. She belonged to the Girl Scouts, and she attended through the local church. Lindsay had a MySpace page and a Yovel account. Remember Yovel? My kids had those. Her MySpace page listed her as 99 years old, and she was interested in dating, serious relationships, and friendships. On May 29th, 2009, Lindsay posted she'd been getting a lot of nightmares lately and had a bad feeling that something bad was going to happen. Her banner read, "Disturbed." The day before Lindsay went missing, she went to her mother and said she had a feeling something bad was going to happen to her. Her mom asked her what she meant, and Lindsay replied, "I don't know. Something bad." This wasn't the only statement Lindsay made that would later be looked at cryptically. Lindsay mentioned a few incidences that alarmed her mother in hindsight. During interviews with friends of hers, they mentioned either a white van or SUV that Lindsay had said had followed her. Other reports stated there was a man that had followed them into a public restroom at Bierbauer Park, the park that sits between where Lindsay lived and where her friend lived. Lindsay also mentioned a man who had approached her asking for help to find his dog. The man had flyers up all over town, and local authorities stated his story seemed legitimate. On the day that Lindsay went missing, she had attended a birthday party. It was one of those above-ground pools that you can throw up in the backyard in a few minutes and then spend 8 hours filling with a hose, and kids love it because it was June. It was the end of June, and it was hot outside. So the kids were playing in this pool, and they were all in their swimsuits and having a great time, and they went from there. I had heard that they had gone to a video store, and at some point, you know, they were just milling around town. This town isn't very big. It's really centered economically around a door factory. It's part of the timber industry, but eventually they went to manufacturing doors, and it's the main employer of this town. Some of those doors you can actually see on the Harry Potter movies. So in true kid fashion, Lindsay and her friend Michaela weren't quite ready to call it an evening. It was a Friday night. So they walked over to Lindsay's house, and they asked Lindsay's mom, Melissa, if it would be okay if Michaela stayed a night there. Melissa didn't have any problem with that, but she wanted to make sure it was okay with Michaela's mom, and Lindsay decided that she was going to take a shower, get dressed, got back into her bathing suit, and they decided to walk over to ask Michaela's mom if that would be all right. Now, Melissa kind of said that she just had a feeling, and so she sent her brother with her to walk them over to Michaela's house. Lindsay had borrowed her brother's bike, but the chain kept slipping off, and so she was scooting down the road, and she got annoyed with it about halfway through, and she decided to ditch it in some bushes behind the Shell station. Her brother wasn't super happy about this idea. He wanted his bike, and so they got into a verbal fight, you know, like kids do, and somebody had seen them fighting. It was one of Melissa's friends, and she sent Lindsay's brother home. So her brother heads home, and they move onward. They arrive over at Michaela's house around 9:30, which I'm going to tell you right now, that timeline is so disputed, but this is what I'm going off of, is the search reports and things like that that were filed. Michaela's mom said that it wasn't a good night for them. They were going to be getting up the next morning early to head out to the coast, And so she sent Lindsay home. Michaela walked out and watched her as she walked down the street. The last time that anyone remembers seeing Lindsay was somewhere around 3rd Street.
Told her not tonight, and she headed home.
That was Michaela's mom, Kara, and she had received a phone call from Melissa Baum around 10 o'clock as it was getting awfully late for Lindsay to be out, and she was afraid of the dark. It didn't make any sense. And just to put some rumor to rest, in Washington State at 9:30, although that is the time of sunset, it's not dark out until probably around 10:15 is really when it hits that peak darkness. Michaela's mom replied that Lindsay had started walking home somewhere around 9:30. And Melissa, beginning to panic, she hits the streets on foot because her car is broken down, and Michaela's mom came and picked her up, and they drove around and tried to find Lindsay for about 45 minutes. And when Lindsay couldn't be found, she called the McCleary Police Department. The search began. The town of McCleary and law enforcement, including the FBI, took to the streets and began canvassing and stopping all the vehicles that were coming into town to ask them if they had seen Lindsay.
Hey, man, sorry to hold you up for a second. We're out here tonight trying to find that one piece of information that's going to bring her home. We're just asking some quick questions about Lindsay Baum.
No one hopes for a safe return more than Michaela Campin.
That's me, that's Lindsay, and that's my brother Tyler. We're more than best friends, we're like sisters. That's what we say to everyone.
Michaela made her own missing persons flyer, written with the emotion of a 10-year-old girl who hasn't seen her best friend in 4 days.
It says, missing 10-year-old girl, Lindsay Baum. They said she was 80 pounds, but she's really 95 pounds. Short brown hair, wearing light blue hoodie, dark blue pants with rips in the knees, black slip-on shoes. Please help look for her.
From the very first moment that something is wrong.
Other than meeting with police, Melissa Baum hasn't left her home since last Friday.
Trying to stay here just in case she calls.
Her daughter Lindsay's been missing for almost 6 full days. Yet she's still hopeful the 10-year-old is alive.
I know she's alive. I know some people are thinking I'm crazy, but...
Lindsay's parents had divorced the year prior, and they had moved from Tennessee back into Melissa's home state of Washington. Here's a clip from Scott Baum, Lindsay's father.
Scott Baum, I'm Lindsay's father. I'm in from Tennessee. What I'm here today to do is to appeal to everybody out there watching. Please bring my daughter home. I'm fixing to deploy to Iraq, and tomorrow is her birthday. I would love nothing more than to see my daughter before I have to go.
The town turned out for the search and brought people from all over the country. There were search dogs that were tracking her scent, tracking the ground, tracking the air. There were searches by helicopter. There were searches on the ground with people just walking through all of the massive amount of woods surrounding this area, and they found nothing. Nothing. Law enforcement then started canvassing neighborhoods and checking in with all of the sex offenders that reside in and around McCleary. And I tell you what, there is a few. The search reports reek like a dark comedy of some sort. It's absolutely ridiculous. And if it wasn't so serious, it would be laughable. One of the first suspects worked at the ORV park. He was a recent transplant from Mason County, a neighboring county. And he was turned into police as a tip because recently he had shown somebody some slightly child pornographic photos that made them uncomfortable. When law enforcement arrived there, they did see the photos. There was an adult nude female lying on a bed, being a good girl was what the title was. There was another female in her mid to late teens who was in a bathing suit. Pictures appeared to be taken without the subject knowing, which is super creepy in itself. But this guy's kind of a weird guy. Law enforcement had located some newspaper articles inside his motorhome, which indicated that he was in a lawsuit where he was suing the Catholic Church in the Seattle area for being molested at the hands of a priest when he was a child in the 50s. He confirmed that he was still in counseling for those events, and he can't be around priests and sees them as pedophiles. While officers were inside the motorhome, this man made a comment about the motorhome being used and that who knows what's inside those walls. Freaking weird thing to say. So officers tore it apart and looked inside the walls, and guess what? There was nothing there. They did locate a file on his computer, though, that it apparently downloaded to the laptop. And that was entitled Preteen Lolita, Two Girls and a Boy, and noted was a child pornography site. So while this guy isn't a perfect candidate for Citizen of the Year by any means, doesn't mean that he took Lindsay. We don't know. I do know that he became upset and was no longer his cheerful, jovial self and no longer wanted law enforcement inside of his motorhome. As law enforcement got a little closer to this guy, they realized that he actually did know Lindsay. He was at the library on June 25th, the day that Lindsay had gone in and checked her Yeovil and MySpace. And turns out his grandson actually knew her. And this guy told his grandson she was cute and good job for being friends with her. He made some inconsistent statements about where he was on Friday evening. And again, I brought up he works at an ORV park. And this is kind of interesting. The ORV park is actually just outside of McCleary. And I actually have a few friends that were there that weekend and participating in a motocross competition. I asked her if she was searched or if she remembers anything about that weekend when she came through McCleary, and she said that they did pull them over and they showed her the flyer and asked if they'd seen Lindsay Baum, and then they searched her vehicle, but they didn't search her trailer, which I think is kind of strange, but you know, maybe not. Maybe they didn't look suspicious enough to search their trailer. The trailer only had their motocross stuff in it, so it would have been wasted time, I suppose, but it is kind of strange that they didn't bother to search it. I don't know. There was another suspect that Lindsay had been talking to through one of her accounts online. They searched this guy out and they cleared him. So whatever that was, I guess that's cleared. This guy was from the East Coast, and I believe he was actually Lindsay's age is what they had deduced. There was also an affidavit for search warrant to search mobile telephone numbers using access between 7:12 that evening, and later it started at 8:13 was the first request, and then they actually bumped it up all the way to 10 p.m. approximately. They got the subscriber information, mobile telephone numbers used to access the internet through different IP addresses that they were looking at, and they even went through Microsoft Online Services to get the legal compliance to do so. The next affidavit that they asked for was from 9:15 to 11 o'clock on 6/26, and this one was subscriber information and GPS location of calls. And again, nothing. Another concerned citizen turned in this guy named John, who had some pretty gross photos of five-year-olds and girls in their bathing suits, pretty focused on the worst of all regions. And when they went through his computer and his cell phones and under his My Photos, there was photos of girls that were tied up, bound, gagged. They all appeared to be maybe 18, but regardless, this guy is a pretty good candidate. He stated he was bipolar, on Social Security, and immediately had no idea where he had been that weekend and screwed up his alibi. He said he was with this guy. This guy was like, nope, not with me. He was like, oh yeah, I was over here with this guy. Oh, okay, cool. You know, and the thing is like, do you know where you were at? You know, a year down the line, 3 months down the line even, you know, I can understand that. But regardless, this guy's a scumbag. And then we have Richard, whose behavior changed dramatically after June 26th. 2009, and was found with some barely legal pornography. His ex-wife claimed that his behavior changed pretty radically in June of 2009. And to be said, they are divorced. She said he was in good spirits and helped with money for events surrounding his kid's graduation. He said it went well, and after about 4 days, he flew back to Washington. He said after that, he didn't call or text his son or daughter and didn't return phone calls, even on Father's Day in 2009 or in 2010. He said that he had moved to McCleary to live with his stepfather and his stepfather's wife in June of 2008. Now, this guy was friends with a guy named Ricky the Rat, which I just got to throw out there, like, the fuck is happening down here? And this guy was selling some marijuana to our buddy Dick. And Dick here, he lived across the street from where that pool party had taken place earlier that day. He failed to disclose a storage unit that he had. And his son said that their father stopped communicating with him after he returned to Washington in June of 2009. This guy's a good suspect only because he lived on the route. He lived next door to where the pool party was. And he doesn't remember anything about that day, supposedly. In the first two interviews with police, he stated he didn't know who Lindsey Baum was. And the third, he stated that last thing he remembered about June 26, 2009 was seeing Lindsey Baum in the pool at the neighbor's residence. He was forced to report his appearance in the Shell Mart video. Remember Shell? Yeah, the Shell place. So Shell Station was where, if you remember, Lindsey stashed her brother's bike. It's on the route. He doesn't remember being in Shell Mart whatsoever, but there was a video. And that video had a clear recollection of his activities. With the timestamp that the woman who had seen Lindsey and her brother arguing and the timestamp on the Shell Mart video could deduce that Lindsey would have been on route right about the time that he was exiting the Shell Mart. Now, at a neighboring gas station, there's another video that comes into question. And that video has a suspect that a lot of people have probably already heard about. His name is Tim, and the evening that Lindsey disappeared, he was parked nearby Melissa and Lindsey's home, and Melissa, out on foot looking around, sees his van parked and asks what he's doing. And he said, I heard about the search. I work for EMS, and I heard about the search, and I wanted to help. She got into the van with him. They drove around, and they searched for Lindsey together. Tim had a class in a neighboring town. There's a bunch of tiny towns around here that we'll probably be talking about. And this one's like 40 minutes away or so. So he was in a class there. He said the class didn't get out until, you know, 9, something like that. And so he wouldn't have even been back in town at the time that Lindsey disappeared. But what we found was the surveillance videos of another gas station in town showed that actually, he was in town. So now this just threw everything to the wind, and everybody starts thinking, this is the guy. To throw another hitch in your giddy up, this guy also had a business that was on the route of where Lindsey disappeared. Law enforcement went and searched his business and his home. They found a bunch of stuff, but nothing actually pertaining to the case, or that wouldn't even be considered suspicious for people that live up in the Northwest. Having a rope or having zip ties or hunting stuff, like, who doesn't have that up here? Everybody's got that. This is a culture thing up here that if you were to come into my home right now and you searched through things and you wanted to look at something critically, you could find it. Sure. I've got all sorts of stuff. I've got zip ties. Sometimes you need zip ties for your cords. Sometimes you need rope if you're going camping. You know, I don't hunt, but law enforcement didn't clear him as a suspect, but there was no evidence to say that he had anything to do with the crime. And the only suspicious thing is that his business was on the route and that he didn't know exactly where he was at 9:30 that evening. And then we have Dale Golder, whose name has been mentioned probably more than anyone else's on media forums. Dale's family is multi-generational, and they own a large tract of property just outside the town of McCleary. Dale also thought it was strange that a 10-year-old would go missing, especially in a town that, you know, he grew up in. So he was out one day and decided to follow a car that had previously been following him. That car turned out to be Melissa Baum's sister. Dale didn't recognize the vehicle as being somebody local, and he thought it was suspicious. Well, Melissa Baum thought it was suspicious, too, that somebody in a small white car was following them, and especially after Lindsay had stated that a white vehicle had been following them. But remember, that was a white SUV, not a Honda del Sol. Dale also made the comment that he thought maybe they were stealing parts off of his car. And, you know, everybody kind of scoffs at that, but you know what? I'll tell you what. My friend had one of those little Honda del Sols, and people would try to steal the parts off of it all the time because they didn't make them for very many years. It wasn't in production. So getting parts, hard to come by, that's actually legitimate. It sounds ridiculous, but that is legitimate. Melissa Baum called it in, and Dale was looked at as the next suspect. A large search was performed on his property and his family's property. Nothing was found that could connect him to Lindsay. Again, not exactly cleared, but also not really a suspect. Back in 2019, I started this podcast and I had a personal experience that I just had to cease and desist for a moment. But during that time, I actually reached out to Mr. Golder and we had a pretty good conversation. He's never really done an interview. And in the time that I've known him and we've gained some trust, he has agreed to do an interview. So I think it would be best if we left that information up to our interview with Dale to hear what he was thinking, what he was going through, and what he's been through in the time since Lindsay disappeared. So essentially, that's the first 2 years of search warrants. And since that time, there's been more news. There was a talk of these elderly men that lived not too far away. They also had a house up in Seattle, but they had one in Shelton as well, which is just outside of McCleary. And these guys had child porn that they had taken themselves all over the place. Now, they were so elderly that they ended up not really prosecuting them, and one of the other brothers died. One had dementia. He couldn't even stand trial. So these guys essentially got away with everything that they did to potentially hundreds of victims because they just laid low and they never got caught. When law enforcement searched their property, they did find a missing persons poster of Lindsay Baum, but other than that, nothing else connected them to the case. And then in May of 2018, we all received the news that nobody wanted to hear.
I'm here today to share with you that we've brought Lindsay home. We've recovered her. Sadly, she was not recovered as we and her family had hoped and prayed these last 9 years. Her remains were recovered in September of 2017, unknowingly, by some hunters in a remote portion of eastern Washington. Those remains were turned over to local authorities, who in turn released them to the FBI, where they were confirmed to be human, and sent to the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, for analysis for DNA. Because the remains were not associated with a specific criminal investigation, they were not analyzed for DNA until just recently. So just in the recent week were we notified that the DNA collected from the remains matched the DNA submitted to the lab in 2009. Today we will not be releasing a lot of specific information.
In the next episode, I'm going to be sitting down with Tracy Izat, a producer creating a documentary about the Lindsay Baum case. We were shocked when a person of interest was arrested who had formerly lived in McCleary at the time that Lindsay disappeared and was linked by DNA to a brutal 2003 rape of a young lady. We're going to talk about this new guy. We're going to talk about all the ins and outs of the case, have a nice little round table about it. I truly do believe that the truth can be found in the shadow. The shadow is where all the evil plays. The shadow is where these guys live. But if there's enough of us with enough light, I truly believe we can find truth in the shadow. So I'm going to leave you today with Melissa Baum.
First of all, I want to start by thanking law enforcement, McCleary PD, Grays Harbor County, the FBI, the Washington State Patrol, departments too numerous to mention individually, all the volunteers, everyone who's ever spent time out searching, even anyone that's ever said a prayer for my daughter. I just want to reach out and let you know that I greatly appreciate it. As far as recent events, I attempted to write a statement on what exactly to say to convey how I feel. There are no words. The fact is, a monster stole my 10-year-old little girl, and they murdered her, and they dumped her like trash in the woods. So my fight now has turned from looking for my daughter to finding who killed her. This person is a monster, and I grew up teaching my children that monsters didn't exist. So now when you're telling your children monsters don't exist, you're lying. Just keep that in mind. They do exist, and they don't look like monsters. They look like your next-door neighbor. They look like the person who lives down the street or the person who works in your school. Yeah, I urge anyone that has any information, any knowledge of any kind to please come forward. We need justice. The people who did this to Lindsay deserve to be punished. And the children still out there, your children deserve to be safe. And as long as we allow monsters like this on our streets, none of our children are safe. Thank you.